First order of business would be maybe to silence your cell phones, Dean. Somebody will get interrupted today. We'll start off with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, item three on today's agenda is a discussion of possible action and approval of the agenda for January the 21st of 2014. Does anybody have any issues with today's agenda?
Yeah, corrections, additions. On second readings, there's board of subs, and then let just correct in the PDA, Isabel Kitchen. We did discussions there, and we did the PDA as Isabel's kitchen.
Mark, come on up.
Mark Joseph Phillips, Story County resident. Discussion before the approval of today's agenda for January 21st, 2004. Mr. Chairman, my concern is also in second readings, and I think this happened at the last meeting, L&M, that it shows Mustang Ranch Emporium twice. I think M should be Mustang Ranch Mercantile. L&M. Mustang Ranch Emporium's listed twice. I think it should be Mercantile in one of them.
And we corrected that last time, but we can correct that at the next meeting because they haven't asked for their inspections.
Okay.
So we'll get that corrected.
All right, and there's a typographical on L also that'll be corrected on Ranch.
And then we'll go ahead and make the corrections we talked about showing the current chair, vice chair, commission structure on the header of the agenda.
The template just needs to be updated.
And I believe also item 8 has been at least verbally fixed, but item 8 should reflect we're looking to cancel the March 4th, 2014.
Okay, I get a motion for approval of today's agenda.
I make a motion to approve today's agenda.
Second.
We're moving to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, item number 4, discussion of possible action, the approval of the minutes for November the 19th, 2013.
I would make a note that the clerk has provided me a copy of an email dated last Friday in which Janet House is requesting that her list be incorporated into the minutes. And I would remind the commission that our minutes are not a verbatim transcription of these meetings. They are part of the permanent record kept by the clerk, but that routinely we do not include all of the tabs and attachments that are provided throughout in the actual minutes.
Thank you. Anything else on this? At this point, ask for a motion for approval.
Motion to approve minutes for November 19th.
Do I get a second on that?
I'll second.
Moved and second to approve the minutes November the 19th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Item number 5, discussion of possible action, the approval of the minutes for December the 3rd, 2013. Anyone have any discussion on that? Ask for a move for approval.
Motion to approve for December the 3rd.
I get a second on that?
Second.
Then moved and second to approve December the 3rd, 2013 minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries. Item 6, discussion and possible action approval of the minutes for January the 7th, 2014. Anybody have anything on that?
No. Motion to approve January 7th.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approval. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. That's good. These last two meetings, we've cleared up a couple of months of the minutes.
Yeah.
That's great.
Good job.
All right. Next up is the consent agenda. Anybody have anything to talk about on the consent agenda? Guys are easy on us today. All right.
Okay. Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Can I get a second?
Second motion.
And move a second to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, let's see here. Item 9, possible action approval of licensing board on the first readings. That was on the consent agenda, was it not? Okay, excuse me. 8, 9, sorry. Okay. Item 10, discussion. There'll be no action on this. Right on the staff reports. Okay. Mr. Gallagher from the Comptroller's Office.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, we are embarking in new waters here today during staff presentation. We will be giving some review of the actual versus budgeted figures for the 6 months ended December 31st, 2013. This is a progress that will continue through June. We've had great meetings with the department heads. We have found several things which will make each and every review of this process for the oncoming months even better. A couple of things that we found were that, number one, there were misclassifications as far as account numbers. The department managers did a great job in digging down through each and every one of their accounts and are now providing me journal entries of things that should have been in from one account into another account, which now makes a significant bit of difference, because those things, as we do the budget process, we expect certain items to go into certain accounts. It was incorrectly done, obviously not on purpose, but these adjustments are made, and it is part of the process. We have also found that a certain number of vendors have been certainly overcharging us. And so we have gone back to those vendors, and there will be credits coming forth through that. So it's a pretty good audit mechanism that we are now going to use each and every month to make sure the vendors do their job. And we also found there's a lot of things that during the budget process certainly happening, it's what we call timing differences. We may have a chunk of money that we've got to spend in the first quarter of the year and not spend it at all for the following year, but at least we can explain what the item is, and so those items will catch up as the year goes by. I will start off with explaining the general revenue process in the general fund. I will then turn it over to Mr. Witten for the commissioners and the administration budget. I will have the clerk treasurer go over her report, Jen Chapman, her report. I will do Janice Eden's because she's currently the only person in the office today, and I will do hers for her. Mike Nevin will then come forward, and he will do buildings and grounds, swimming pool, service, the roads department, water and sewer. He has six departments within his. Sheriff Antonora will then discuss the Sheriff's Department within the General Fund, which is 107, and the Jail Fund, which is its own separate revenue fund. We will then go to Community Development. The District Attorney will then be online, as well as the Justice Court, Communications, IT, myself, and then Gary Hames will discuss the two fire districts and the Mutual Aid Fund. Starting off with the General Revenue, in those items, we will see that our ad valorem is actually tracking above, which is about 68%. Some of that is due to the fact that some of our taxpayers kind of like to pay all the bill at one time instead of installments. This will probably even out as the 6 months go forward. As far as our assessors, ad valorem, it is 24%, mainly due to the fact that they don't send their bills out until after the roll is done. The roll was done last month, and so consequently those billings should come forward as the 6 months goes. We may also note that the same percentage was here last year at this time and ended up catching up through the following parts of the year. We have franchise tax fees. We actually budgeted this $20,000 less last year. We kind of took a shot and said, well, our franchise tax fees will probably be better. This is really nothing more than Verizon and those franchise Sierra Pacific Power. We'll take a look at some of those as they go forward.
I think we drilled into this one. We always get confused, but I think for clarity, I believe franchise tax fees.
Oh, that's the waste. It's the waste.
That's the landfill.
It is. It's the landfill.
And then we'll get the utilities.
We have got an audit going on with landfill currently to make sure that all that stuff is done before the end of the year. We then have merchandise licenses. They are 38% of what our budget is now. That certainly will increase as business licenses come forward in May. There will be an increase, of course, in that. Let's see. Assessor's fees are 29%. And again, that's relative to the assessed ad valorem. That's pretty much because they get 6% of that fee. As the ad valorem tax for the assessors come in, that fee will also go up. And I think one note to mention is that business license fees are, as far as the penalties are concerned, are 342% above the budget, which means Dean's doing a very good job on the business license side of getting all those delinquencies. That is my report on the general fund revenue. We are tracking right now, total, as of December 31st, 49% of where we were as far as the budget's concerned, which I think is tracking well. As we go forward on the expense side, I am pleased to tell you that for all but probably two departments, everybody was below probably 50%, and some of them even below 40. I mean, it's an extraordinary job that our department heads are doing as far as controlling expenses. First on board for his expense review is County Manager Witten, which will go over the commissioners and the administrative fund within the general.
Okay. I'm looking at the two accounts that I have principal responsibility for. Those are both components of the general fund, one being the account marked commissioners and the other being general administrative. In the commissioner's account, we are slightly over in office supplies. It is basically incrementally unimportant, in my opinion. We budgeted $500. We've spent to date $276, which gives us a 55% to plan. We did have to buy hard hats and safety vests for all three of you guys, and I think I needed a safety vest or something out of this. So. That's kind of the bulk of that. Telephone is up, but that's, again, knowing that there are really two accounts and multiple functions in our office between HR being primarily administrative and versus the commissioners, we are 78% of plan, and we're under plan over in the, over on the commission or on the administrative side of the house. So we will be shifting an allocation there a little bit to keep it on target. Travel's up 122%, and all I can say is you guys are all over this county, and I'm proud of you, whether it's in Winnemucca for Sage Grouse or Washington, D.C., to lobby for the completion of USA Parkway. That is up. We are 122% of budget.
and is going to go up some more because there's a NACO conference. So this will be, I've mentioned throughout the year to you gentlemen that we do have higher than anticipated monies that we can augment in from our prior budget, and we will be doing that overall, but we're up for reasons I think we all know and understand. Dues and subscriptions are up slightly. We're running 55% of plan. Again, not a major component. We budgeted $500. We spent $275. A lot of these are just, as Hugh said, it's the timing in which the dues and subscriptions are paid. Training, we are up at 95%. And again, that is on training. We've been giving you guys as much immersion into the training as we possibly can through through UNRs and other course opportunities out there on open meeting law and good county governance. So that's up, and will probably be augmented slightly as we end out the year. Gas and diesel's up for exactly the same reason. We're 87% of plan. And again, I attribute that directly as a credit to you guys and how much travel regional and national participation you're doing. And then computer equipment, we're at 97% of plan. We had a computer that as we ended the last fiscal year, we knew was dying. That happened to be mine, actually, and then there were some other small purchases in here. We knew it was going to die. We are hoping nothing else will die between now and June. But it should be in pretty good shape. And my miscellaneous is up at 67% of plan. That's, again, we budget $500. We spent $340. In general, what we do with that is when we have immediate family members, Rob Dufresne and Johnny Dufresne come to mind. When, you know, when Bob passed away, the county provides a floral arrangement, and, you know, expressing his sympathy. So that is the commissioner's budget. Overall, we're performing on the expense side of the house 46% to plan. We budgeted $534,000 and change, and we've spent $247,000 and change in the commissioner's budget. Administrative is a much larger budget. This is kind of the overall kitchen catch-all drawer for the county. Our insurance policies and everything are paid from here. We are up in our rents and leases slightly. Running 51% of plan. We do have, interestingly enough, what Jesse and Jennifer are calling a ghost check that seemed to have written itself out there that was never cashed but has been expensed against this account. So I'm told we're going through the stop payment process with the bank, and that should get us actually right on plan. And there's no reason why that shouldn't perform the plan throughout the remainder of the year. Legal printing, we're at 89%. Excuse me, we budgeted $3,000. We spent $8,600. I call this the blame it on Austin excuse. When you modify an entire zoning set of ordinances, 200 pages that have to go through all the grinders and blenders and baking process that it does, and it comes out in 280 pages, well, guess what? Companies need to put that now in book structured format and do all that stuff so it's legal with everybody that is charged with following it. And that was a high cost, but we got a great product out of it. And future costs should be minimal. We can tweak the plan, but we don't have to totally redo it as we've done in the past. We have on our insurance deductible, we're running 78% of plan. Several years back, we went from, I think, a $500 deductible, which seemed like bad business, to a $5,000 deductible to control our insurance costs primarily based on claims experience. And we do have one lingering, nagging civil litigation case going on. Our insurance attorneys are paying for it, but we are burning through our deductible. It involves malicious prosecution, essentially. I think 9 of 10 counts, I'm not giving you an exact count, have all been dismissed in federal court, but this is going toward that case and costing us. The good news is it'll cap out presumably at $5,000 and we'll be done. Just hope we don't have another loss between now and then. And I'm sorry, I missed one. Grant match. I got to find it on my list here. I've lost it. We are over in our grant match. but we are over because of the commission's direction benevolently to help Community Chest fund their library, and we've got a different fund that we will be moving this one into, so it doesn't cause an overage. And the great news in administrative, and keep in mind, this is a $2 million budget by the time we have insurance premiums and everything else that we pay. We budgeted $2 million. We've spent $690,000, so we're running 33% to plan as opposed to 50%. So those are the my two.
That's good. And along those lines, even though some of the percentages are above budget, the dollar value is very minimal. So.
Correct.
What's in there? Okay. So.
Next online is our clerk treasurer.
Good morning. I have two of them, the clerk treasurer's and district court. For the clerk treasurer budget, we are at 42% for the year. We're over in one, which is dues and subscriptions, we're over by $72. Not a huge deal. And then the other one we're real close on is the computer equipment. And like Pat, we bought a computer at the beginning of the year, so that ate up the budget for the rest of the year. The other one is the district court, and we're at 59% on that one. We're over in public defender right now, but during the year we recoup those fees back as they're collected from the defendants. Otherwise, I think we're right on track with nothing too exciting.
That's good.
Thank you.
I might mention, Mr. Chairman, that that pair overall was at 42%, which is, I think, a great job for understanding that we're 6 months through the year. Next will be Jen Chapman and the recorder. Recorder.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And my expenses, similar to many other people. Overall, we're about 44% of our budget right now, but as you can see, there are some discrepancies in those line items, and I'll go by each one of them. Office supplies is over. And this is really singularly due to the fact that we have purchased new security paper. We're taking a preventive measure against document fraud by utilizing this new security paper for all our certified marriages. It's the same as you see with like birth certificates and stuff like that, but we've had to buy both landscape and portrait, so it will correctly format on all the different formats of our previous marriage licenses. That was expensive, and this is a cost that, you know, it wasn't something that we even realized we needed until we had a lot of problems with people getting a certification of marriage, going down to DMV, and DMV saying no. And then at some point, I mean, I don't know how many people, managers and administrative people at DMV I had talked to that said, you know, I need you to verify that this is your signature. I'm like, trust me, it's my signature. But this has fixed that. There is enough paper there that it will last for years, and it's also provided a great template for the office to be used for years and years to come. So that was an expense that we did not foresee. Telephone, for phone correspondence. I am on the record at the Recorders Association of Nevada, and we have had many, many phone conferences. A lot of it is just basic recorder meetings and stuff like that, but it's going to show, and that's just going to vary. It's not that much. It's 52%, I think. The next one is travel. I'm sure that everybody knows I'm just such a huge supporter of ensuring that people employed know how to do their job. They know how to do it professionally and to a T, really. It's really costs were incurred by two things. The fact that we had a new employee, and she came in as entry level, And it is extremely important for all the projects that I have in the office going on right now that deal with information infrastructure and preservation metadata, ensuring that all our images and our information structure will be able to withstand all the information we're putting at it. I talk about things when we're doing all the imaging and stuff like that. If we don't have a system that's going to be able to handle that, it's a massive problem. People won't be able to get the documents, et cetera, et cetera. As we want to put more and more of our information online, we're building this system. These costs are to ensure that our people know not just about, you know, the preservation, which is a very big part of what we're doing, but also that they know about things like information systems, databases, management of digital information, understanding of public data privacy laws, and then, of course, you know, RIM, Records Information Management. So that's what that is. Dues and subscriptions, again, it's the same with many other departments. Yearly subscriptions, they're often renewed at one time of the year. They balance out at the end. Mapping. I also talked about this during budget last year, that I was going to incur more expenses in this. As we are going through our mining map books and basically cleaning them up, getting them digitized, and making sure that the information that is presented in those books is up to date and accurate. Statutorily, that's what we're required to do, and I found enough discrepancies on the ones there to require us to look harder at it. So that's what that is. And then training. Training and travel, they kind of go hand in hand. And but again, all the training and travel expenses have been, that's all that's there for the year. So what you see right now, that's going to be pretty much that's all there is. And then just on a last note, I would like to mention that we did receive the grant from the Trans-Canada Pipeline. They basically awarded us enough money to have a general preservation assessment, basically, on all our historic records. So we're very happy to see that, and as that happens, we'll give out more information.
So the travel and the training have primarily taken place in the first 6 months of the year.
You know,
you're not anticipating as much in the second.
No, they're all paid for. A lot of those education, you know, you pay for it 6 months in advance. So, but.
Well, our project is to get as much of our public information online as possible.
Yeah.
And that's certainly for the folks that live here in our county. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a priority, a job well done, and thank you. I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you.
Jen, have you got any kind of an estimate on how much server space you're going to need down the road on for storage on, and do we have enough? Is that a question you'd rather just?
That's a very complicated answer.
Okay.
We really have to deal with two forms of information. Physical, the old books, and all the preservation issues that we need to deal with for those. But now, as more and more things go online, we really have to focus on preservation of digital information. And you know, each has their own, you know, pros and cons. Digital information, it's, you know, it's not something that you can, like, really file away and come back 3 years later and pull out, because, you know, you have systems that change, the software and the hardware, that all changes, and that needs to be migrated. And if you don't migrate it right and you don't continually check it, it can degrade. And for our office, that's a huge concern, because this information is supposed to be there forever. So we have to make sure that we're always on top of it and checking that information. I mean, sometimes things in our office are a little redundant, makes people's eyes roll back, but, you know, we like it, and that's why we do what we do. So.
And know that this is a voluminous project, that you've undertaken, do you have any idea, unfair question, but as a percentage, what percentage of your information has been publicly loaded at this point?
Three years ago when I came on, information from 2010 on was released online. Right now, we're back to 1994, and I'm hoping to get to 1990 online. So we've been kicking it out.
Big chunk.
It's getting there.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Besides, it's funner once we get in the old book, so if we can get through all of this stuff, it'll go faster.
Certainly all the current is there.
Yeah.
In the good news, Bill, I think to respond to your question about server space is it seems to get cheaper by the day. Every time we're able to, pull together with what we have, our internal storage capacity of what we have today compared to what we had 3 years ago is incredible. And I could quote it, but our IT director just had a baby, he and his wife, so he's home enjoying his fatherly time. But I'm astounded at some of the things we can do between that and the cloud, although the cloud is a little bit more problematic because of the security.
It is. However, for us and our redacted records, the ones that we put online, that is part of some of those changes we're making. And we are going to be pushing those to the cloud. That's something that we're building right now. So, they're public documents, and they're, everybody has issues with the cloud, but most of us are probably already using it without necessarily knowing it. It's good.
Thank you. Nice job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Mr. Chairman, next on the board is the assessor's office and Janice Eden, and there's actually two items. And this is one thing that comes up and was a good part of what came up. And as you direct yourself to the postage criteria that says that they're 90% over budget, and also take a look at the printing, which says that they're at 63% of the budget, this is all one line item that happened to the rolls. In the previous discussions on budget, their budgeted item was for printing the rolls was to include the postage. We had to go back through the notes of the budget to figure that out. This is going to be a journal entry and will rectify itself down the road. So that's pretty much for Jen. And at the end of the, for the 6 month ended, she is at 42% of her budget. Which is pretty darn good. So that will be an adjustment that will be reflected next month through a journal entry, and that should not appear next month. Next, I'd like to have Mike Nevin come up and talk about his four funds or three funds and three admin funds.
Good morning, Commissioner. I don't know what you have in front of you, but we'll start with the buildings and grounds section, if you all have that in front of you there. Okay. We're tracking expenditures to date of 37% overall. There are a few line items that you'll note that are over budget or close to the 50 or over. The first one is unemployment compensation, and we don't necessarily know or budget anything for that, and it's not to be known. This particular claim is under review as we speak and may even be challenged. So. I've had some discussions with the comptroller relative to this one line item there. moving down, laundry, it's running about 55%. This is the courthouse mats and rags and towels and stuff that the custodial staff uses. Building maintenance is tracking about 80%. This last summer, we had two of our air conditioner units fail. One happened to be in the courtroom here, the other in the front section up of the upstairs that covers the JP recorder and clerk's office. These were unanticipated, of course. I had hoped that maybe the district court would reimburse us for their portion of it, but that hasn't happened, and it may. So that's why that's tracking about 80% instead of at about 50. And then the only other one that I see on buildings and grounds is the fire museum. We allocate $5,000 toward a reporting project that was completed, and so they have a balance of about $839. So you see that where that's tracked at the 83%, but that project is complete, so there'll be no more expenditure out of that unless they request the 830 for some incidental reason relative to that project.
Before Mike moves on to the next, I might add, when that air conditioner failed, it failed during the trial, yeah, as I recall. And while it wasn't quite a court order from the district court judge, it was all but. So.
In fact, that I want to say they were to the tune of about $3,000, $2,900 and some odd dollars. Yeah, $2,950. Okay, moving into swimming pool, salaries and wages are tracking at 58%. Again, that's a seasonal operation, so we basically only have June to go, so we're well within the parameters for that seasonal operation. And most of these are relative to that seasonal operation. The gas and diesel is tracking about 69%, and that's just timing, again, due to the seasonal operation of the park and pool. The only other one there that sticks out is the swim pool repair reimbursement, and this journal entry did not occur in the last fiscal year. This was the county match for the community development block grant that was received for the new handicap access restroom facility, and the work that was completed on the outside of the pool for the handicap parking that needed to be provided. So he was not overly concerned with it. He said the money was already pre-allocated, so him and Sherry work on that. So I guess the funds for the match were just included in that pool budget, so in the out of the general. Okay, moving into service, telephone. On service, we're tracking about 42%, and we're 50% through the year, so we're doing fairly well. Telephone, we had to buy a new phone for our shop supervisor. His crapped out, and you know that was about $200 of the $352 that's been spent thus far. Operating supplies, excuse me, we're tracking at about 57%. We're watching that closely. That's filters, oil, lube, that sort of thing. Shop supplies that is used to benefit all departments that we provide fleet service to in the county. Building maintenance, we had a little project that was recently completed, so that's at the 89%. There'll be no further expense from that fund. We were budgeted $500 and we've spent $447.30, but again, that little project has been completed. Professional services, these are mandatory drug and alcohol testing that Pool Pack pulls out of the hat, so we don't necessarily budget any funds because we never know who's going to go, and it seems the last couple of quarters we've had three of the shop guys get picked twice, so that's where that $100 expense goes there. And then, let's see, well, tires, we show $1,920 being spent. We had to buy new shop tires for our truck, not six tires. The other expense out of this, and we're waiting, and it may have already occurred, is reimbursement from the Virginia City Senior Center for tires for a four-wheel drive van. We pay for it out of this budget, and then as they get cash from their sources, they reimburse, and Hugh does a journal entry and straightens that up. I think that was all in shop. Moving into roads, on the revenue side, we should be at 50%. We're at 52%, so we're a little bit over there, which is a good thing. And our expenses in roads are tracking at 34% of halfway through the year. Auto maintenance, we have actually three accounts that we use for maintenance. One is equipment maintenance, auto maintenance, and heavy equipment maintenance. And what happened here in auto maintenance, there will be a journal entry, I think it amounted to, was it $9,500? Yeah, $9,538 that'll be made, and so that'll get GL'd to the heavy equipment account. So it'll, when that gets cleaned up, we'll have more of a true reflection of exactly where we are in auto maintenance, so we'll be way down there. Tires, we're tracking at about 52%, so that's not too bad. Interest and principal expense. The principal, this is our medium-term financing that is done for the year, so there'll be no more funds expended out of that, so we're 29 cents shy of the allocation of the 47,286. So we saved 29 cents somewhere along the line. I don't know how that happened. And then same with the interest principal. So we'll probably have a little bit of savings on that interest principal come the end of the year. I don't see anything other. I just mentioned on the road maintenance, when we budget in road maintenance, everything is allocated in the 5-4-7-10, which is Virginia City. And then as we spend in each area, we allocate that amount and attribute it to that certain area. So you'll notice Gold Hill has an account, Mark Twain has an account, the Highlands, Lockwood, and Six Mile. So that fund that just moves, you know, those expenditures to where they need to be GL'd into. Okay, moving into water, revenues are tracking at 57% and expenditures at 28%. So we're looking pretty good on the water side. We have a couple of line items that are slightly over. Tires, we had allocated $1,500. Unfortunately, this past summer and fall, we were out on the main line quite a bit, more than we have been in the last 7 years that I've been involved, due to the air release valve project out there, and I'm sure Mr. Witten and Mr. McBride will attest to some pretty rugged and rough territory out there. We had one truck that needed two tires resulting from side cuts in the sidewall, and once that happens, you know, you can't patch it. So they were unanticipated, but, you know, we've got to put tires on the vehicles to keep them on the road. So we're over a little bit there, but we're done buying tires for the year, I hope. Professional services, we have, we're over about, we're tracking about 192%. A portion of this will be GL'd, I think you made mention, and to the ARB project, was actual expenses or design, engineering, inspection, and construction management of that project. So that amounted to $3,933.71. And once that gets GL'd to the correct location, we'll be well within our budget for professional services and water. Okay, and finally moving into sewer. Sewer revenues are tracking again at 53%, and we're 50% into the year, so we're doing fairly well there. Expenses in sewer are tracking at 37%, so we're under. There are a couple of line items, a telephone, and these are handled primarily through the billings are centrally billed and handled out of the administrative office downstairs in the commissioner's office, and we noticed that there was a bill that should have been allocated to the water department for our monitoring line, and it got allocated to sewer. So once that gets GL'd, we'll be within budget for telephone on the sewer side. The other things that telephone pays for a portion of our cell phones for our operators and our iPads. Equipment maintenance, we're a little bit over. We had 5,000 budgeted. We're at 5,979.21. Again, as you're all well aware, we're hopeful that within about a year or sooner, we'll have a new facility down there, but in the meantime, we've got to keep equipment running. I mean, when a motor goes out or a pump fails or something has to be rewired, it has to be taken care of, so that's why we're over there. And I might mention we had a piece of equipment in the lagoon down there that was going to be pretty expensive to repair, and we found three units, similar units that had been mothballed at the Lovelock Correctional Facility. So we were able to buy those three units for $500. It would have cost us about $1,800 to put a new motor on the one unit we had. And then subsequently we sold one of those units for about $175 to Douglas County. So, some cost savings there that we didn't have to spend, but sometimes we just have to bite the bullet when something breaks and it has to be fixed. It, you know, can't be overlooked because it's a critical infrastructure operation down there. Operating supplies. Tracking at about 90%. Oh, and there'll be a journal entry in operating supplies. We have a budget of $7,500, and our expenses to date are at $6,788, but $3,787.77 has to be GL'd back to the 54406 account for SBP utility service support. It just got inadvertently charged to the wrong fund there. And I think Hewitt made a note of that, so we caught that. And that's all I have.
That's great.
Unless you folks have questions. Are we going to be able to do other staff?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, this would be it. Go ahead.
Oh, do you want me to do that while I'm here? Okay. While I'm here, I've got a couple items additionally in staff. Last week we had a bad week in Public Works, specifically in the road department. We're doing some preventive maintenance in the industrial park out there. We've done a lot of weed burning in and around culverts, drainages, along the shoulders, and in and around guardrails. And then, while the weather's been decent, we've been taking advantage of that as well and doing the street sweeping out there. Completed USA Parkway, was in the process of wrapping up Waltham Way, and then was going to move on down to Wild Horse Canyon Drive. And as I was making the last pass on Waltham, just past the 900 Waltham Way address there, that's where the new CAN facility is going to be located. I was operating the street sweeper. Of course, you know, there's only a few of us, so more often than not, I'm out there in a piece of equipment or working right alongside the guys as well. I heard a pop. I thought, what the? It almost sounded like a tire blew out. Well, and all of a sudden the unit started to slow, and then it locked up and the air light came on. So I got out of the vehicle, took a quick peek, and noticed that I was on fire. And it was a pretty significant fire at that point. And I'll share a couple of photographs with the board here. But, of course, I immediately dialed 911 and was connected to a dispatcher in Washoe County, which I didn't realize, and I was wondering why I was getting so many questions. And I thought the dispatcher should have well known where the industrial park was, specifically Waltham Way. But once we got that figured out and I got transferred up here, you know, we got that taken care of, and of course we have to wait for a fire engine to come from Station 74 in Lockwood. And at this point, I don't, you know that the staffing, if it would have been a 75, would have made much difference. We attributed the cause to hydraulic failure. When the sweeper is operating, there are lots of moving parts and pieces. And the hydraulics, in particular, are operating at about 200 PSI. And there is probably in excess of 100 hydraulic lines and fittings in and around and under the hopper of this sweeper. One of those lines had a crimp or something, started to develop a leak, and under pressure, of course, got larger and larger and started to spray a mist of hydraulic fluid towards the exhaust of the vehicle. And it didn't take much for that to flash over and catch fire. When I got out of the truck, it looked like this. So you can see it didn't, I mean, it was covered. I had fire up underneath the rear of the hopper, the right-hand side of the vehicle. And I thought, well, I could get back in the cab and grab a little portable extinguisher we got there, but I knew it wasn't going to do any good. Because to get back in the cab, it would have had to contend with fire up and around the door by that point. So I thought, well, I'd best just back up and move out of the way. But the guys, when they got there, handled the incident. It's some pretty impressive photos.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't take much. I mean, this was all, you know, within 5-10 minutes. I mean, he didn't respond to the scene, but you can see how massive it was. And of course, this piece of equipment is, you know, the most expensive piece of equipment in our road fleet.
Great one day.
And it was only, well, it's 8 years old, I guess, but we're working now through our insurance adjuster, and we have an appraisal company coming up from Las Vegas on Thursday to take a look at the piece of equipment. So in the meantime, I've made a contact with the company that sells Elgin sweepers in Nevada, and I think we've located a rental sweeper in Portland, Oregon, and I should hear back today on what the cost for a rental unit is going to be while we go through the, you know, insurance replacement program for a new sweeper, because once that's done, it's still about 6 to 7 months before you see a new piece of equipment on the road. And we can't wait 6 or 7 months. I mean, you know, it's a pretty important piece of equipment. But they're a complicated piece of equipment. And, you know, the good thing is nobody got hurt and we didn't do any other property damage. Second thing is that I wanted to bring to your attention real quickly, not to take up a bunch of time here, but we did hear from the Department of Interior, Bureau of Land Management, last week, I believe on Thursday. We got notice that the request for the land conveyance for the sewer treatment facility down there has been approved. They made a request for the purchase money and some subsequent documents that needed to be signed. I'm happy to announce that Sherry will be delivering a check to the field office in Carson City this afternoon in the amount of $123.83 for the purchase of that 12.38 acres, more or less, in and around the sewer treatment plant. So once we get all the final documents dotted, crossed, and signed, hopefully USDA will allow us to move forward and put that project out to bid. So, some good news there. The other thing is, and I don't know, just a final thing, we had a sewer incident on K Street last Thursday, and we knew that a portion of the sewer line that runs down Taylor Street included sections of an old water line that ran from the top of the hill up here, top of Taylor Street, up near Greg Hess Sr.'s home. And what we have been around here a while, there used to be a little shack there called the Red House. And there was a tank there. And this fed water in the 1800s down to the Conn, Virginia mine workings, which was a huge facility down and around just below the Chinatown area off of Union Street between Union and Mill. Sometime in the 30s or 40s, that line, of course, was abandoned, and the county decided to use it for main sewer lateral. And it's a 16.5-inch riveted steel line that was probably installed for water use in about 1873. It had become blocked down there near Commissioner McBride's brother's residence, just a little bit to the south of there, where the line then ends and transitions into a concrete 12-inch line. And that's where the leak was discovered. Well, back in the old days when they put these two lines together from a 16 to a 12, they used a tin-type material, if you will, and then encased it with concrete. Well, you know, over time that deteriorates, and we had a failure there, and we removed a section, probably 50-foot section of that line, and it was completely plugged. It was kind of interesting once we pulled it out of there, how bad it actually was.
We had a piece of 16.5-inch steel pipe, so it's pretty large. and Diana. This is the type of stuff you find you don't anticipate finding sometimes.
And that's all tree roots, isn't it?
And they say had the block, and it's blocked completely.
Wow.
So we have to replace it. And in order for that to happen, thankfully, we have real good neighbors and a real strong working relationship with the Lyon County Public Works in Dayton. They have a used Vactor truck that they had purchased, a few years ago from Incline General Improvement District. And they were up here within a half hour with an operator, and they assisted us through the greater portion of the day down there. We were able to jet the remainder of the line out to the intersection of Taylor Street and K, and then clean from basically F Street on Taylor all the way down to the end of the line. So the Vactor truck was able to pick up the cleanup, and so, you know, naturally we don't want to put it on the ground down there, and then we take it down to the sewer treatment plant drying beds. So it's just nice to know that we have neighbors that respond so quickly and give us a hand when need be. So that was what we did the later part of the week. We had a busy week last week. And that's all I have for you. Take up a bunch of time.
Just out of curiosity, what's the cost per foot on 16-inch lap seam riveted pipe running these days?
I'd like to know, Bill. If you find out, can you call me? You know, originally that steel or that riveted pipe, of course, came in sheets.
Yep.
It was shipped over in sheets.
Yep.
And then put together on site with rivets. So, yeah, it was quite the process.
Thanks, Mike. I'd like to remind the commissioners that this is one of those items that, as we were talking about the swimming pool, when you get a grant of some sort, if it's within the general fund gets the revenue, and whoever the department is that does the work on that particular grant or that grant match gets the expense. This is something that it's all part of governmental accounting to track wherever the revenues are and the appropriate expenses, but that's what the augmentation system is for, that is we've got those revenues that are in that, we can augment that against their budget so that doesn't make that budget item so outstandingly different. So just word of that. And as far as the old Red House, I'm not sure if Mike and Marshall were involved in any of this, but that was pretty much the place where everybody learned how to smoke cigarettes. I remember borrowing a couple of my father's Lucky Strikes and a bunch of matches and sticking them in the various rocks around the building. It was almost like pigeonholes for all of us kids to go up there, talk about the day, and have a couple of cigarettes. So this is a word of history there. Our next is Sheriff Antonaro with the General Fund Sheriff Department and the Special Revenue Fund Jail Fund.
Goodness, where to start? Overtime. Go back on a trip through history when we were doing the budgets, and the initial conversation was we weren't going to put any money in there for overtime. We were going to handle it through contingency basis so we can better track the uses of our overtime. But then at the last minute, a little bit of faint-heartedness, we plugged in an arbitrary number that really doesn't mean a whole lot. So while my overtime shows that it's over by 132%, if you look at the historical usage of the overtime for the sheriff's office for the past 3 years, it runs about $127,000 a year, currently sitting at $56,000. Even if I doubled that, I'm going to come back in lower than the historical average. But the good news is that the majority of that overtime isn't occurred during the first half of the year, during the event season. Between now and June 30th, we don't have a whole lot of events, overtime will be more of shift coverage or court or incidental type thing. So as far as the overtime numbers, by my count, that's not bad. Drop down to unemployment. If you guys can figure out unemployment, you're a better man than I, because if somebody worked here once upon a time in the last decade, it seems like they can go back and ding us for it when they claim unemployment. So I can't even begin to explain that. Mr. Gallagher may be able to shed more light on that than I can. Dropping down to the postage, that's a little bit over, but from what I'm told, that's just more volume, more CCWs. Everybody wants one. Federal government's trying to take them. More civil process, more. So one of those unforeseen type of things. Drop down to communications. That's up 83%, but that also includes one of those annual expenditures that has been made and is no longer a drain on the budget. That's a one-time shot deal for our records management that I share with Dave Ballard in for the dispatch and records management services. Training is similar. There's a lump sum payment in there for our policy manual and training module that goes along with that. So that's a up, but again, it's a one-time shot payment that doesn't reoccur during the course of the year. If you drop down to professional services, that's a real interesting one. Just above that is, you'll see the on professional services is 53070. Lab fees are 53069. When this is said and done, and in conversations with Mr. Gallagher last week, we've identified things that probably are better suited in other line items than in this one, including a bill from the fire department, which I don't know why I'm paying Gary's bills. This was something of Gary's, nothing to do with the sheriff's office. They got billed to me. Some of that expense is actually going to be redirected to the coroner's office, where that comes from. Lion's share of that is from a contract services that we have with Washoe County for forensic needs. So when this is all said and done and we get everything adjusted where it's supposed to be, professional services is going to be sitting at about a zero expenditure. Really, none of that money has been spent. It's come out of other places. Now, lab fees will go down, but there again, that's that $15,000 contract that we pay to Washoe County for their forensic services. So lab fees will be up over to 50%, but professional services will be sitting at about $10,000, still sitting there waiting to be used professionally. Capital outlay, another misdirected expense. That's actually a jail expenditure, so that will be redirected to the jail. Coroner's office, I've been telling you about that. Nothing I can say. Trying to get people to stop dying.
Is that in addition to the forensics?
The forensic contract is our annual services. If we need fingerprinting done, toxicology, tool marks, any type of forensic needs, that any analysis, drug testing that they do down at the crime lab, that is that $15,000 a year contract. Our coroner stuff is completely separate, and that contract does not cover autopsies.
Okay.
It's a different entity. So you have Washoe County Sheriff's Office versus the Washoe County
Medical Center.
Okay, thank you.
And that's just on a case-by-case basis on the ME's office. So I think that drops us down to miscellaneous, which is a bit over. One of those charges allocated to that account is being looked at because I think it's a double payment. We're trying to root that out. The rest of it is just little incidental charges that occur throughout the year that we should be about topped out on that, but there again, a lot of that is related to events, like if we have the reserves up here during street vibrations all day long and we have to feed them. That's the type of expenses those are. Might be better charged to the reserve account. We can look at that going forward. And then the last thing that I have on here is, on the general, is the insurance deductible, which in talking with you about it, that may wind up going to professional services, because I think those are related to some personnel issues, not to actual deductibles on our insurance. That should be covered by the law. Any questions on the general?
So by the third quarter at the end, quite a number of these overages may well equal out here within the next 90 days?
Either by the end of the third quarter or by the end of the fiscal year, just depending on how long. And I like the $15,000 out of lab fees, that theoretically should even out by the end of the third quarter.
And the overtime number has the probability of coming down because we're not running as many events here during the springtime, winter and spring.
Correct. If we stay on track with overtime the way that we are, we should be significantly under even our three-year average overtime. There's going to be court, there's going to be training, there's going to be overages to cover shifts, but I would be awful surprised if we doubled that amount in the second half of the year. And like I said, historically it's $127,000 averaged out over the 3 years. We should be on track for being significantly under $100,000.
Thank you.
Jail. I touch one thing that affects the jail budget that will affect the general. The general budget overall is at 40% total. So, total expenditure of 40% on the general budget. Wages were in the 30% mark, 33, somewhere right around there. That is one of the things, and that will affect that overtime number also. And looking at it, appears that I've got two of my field staff that are still being paid out of jail funds. So we're going to be looking at that and getting that adjusted, which will make the general fund wages a little bit higher, but it should bring down the jail fund, the jail fund wages. So both of them will nudge closer to the 50% mark, but one of the things with the wages in the jail is we've been rotating into taking deputies out of the jail, hiring the new correctional officers. That is a significant savings in the jail. Just takes time doing that. There's been some obstacles that we've had to deal with. We're actually in the process of hiring the last correctional officer now, which will remove the last deputy from the jail. So we'll start seeing more of a savings there. But those two wages, both the jail and the general, should balance more towards the 50 percentile once we make those adjustments from the errors that we've already found. Overtime in the jail, similar to the overtime talked about in the general. Same thing in the tracking. We weren't going to, then we did, and so the $8,000 that was plugged in there is kind of an arbitrary number. Realistically, though, it is minimal staffing. If anybody calls in sick, if anybody is out on leave time, it requires overtime to cover. There is no flexibility on jail staffing, and as it is between, I've had two people out on extended medical things this year, and a third person out on an extended leave. So that's realistic. If I don't have the staffing that I need, then it's going to generate overtime. Shows PERS, Medicare, those are all calculated into the wages, salaries, overtimes, and they go hand in hand. If one is up, the other's going to be up. Unemployment, that it's showing on here, well, it shows a balance, a percentage spent is zero. It shows that there's been a significant expenditure. That's something that is being looked into. There's some issues there that are somewhat problematic. Down to the training on there, again, that's a one-time expenditure for the jails portion of the Lexipol, which is module or policy and training modules. But one-time expenditure, not a recurring expense. Uniforms, that's to outfit the new correction officers there. Their uniforms are just a little bit different, and between the time we put the budget together and the time we actually made the purchases, things have a tendency to change pricing, but we're still within the overall budget on that. And like I said, we've only got one person left to equip, so we should be in good shape by the end of the year on that one also. That is about it on that. Overall, we are at 60%, so we're a little over on the jail fund based on this. But I say that's going to change some with adjustments to the wages and the overtime.
Hey, quick question for Hugh. Hugh, was the overtime numbers estimated for fiscal year set arbitrarily low compared to past operational history?
No, we did a test this year trying to cover previously overtime was in salaries and wages. So we wanted to break that out because we wanted to get a handle on the overtime as a whole. So in order to break that out and make that a separate line item for this year's budget, since we had no history for the most part, we decided to say, okay, let's put this in contingency to see where these numbers will fly. This figure represents 6 months of that contingency for each and every one of those funds that went in there. So, you know, obviously it's a number that we came up with that hopefully would require the expense of that would be able to justify that either through attrition, whatever. Gary's going to come up with some stuff because he probably lost 5 people. A lot of that stuff happens, and a lot of overtime is exerted on that. So it was a conscious effort during the budget process. Say, this is what our total is. We're just going to see how this goes for the first 6 months, and then we're going to allocate that 6 months to you and see where you go the rest of the year. And then my recommendation for next year is that we don't put it in contingency. We leave it as a line item in the budget for them to say, this is what I'm going to need for what I think is our overtime needs through whatever it may be, training, crime stuff, whatever, fires, et cetera, et cetera.
So you're going to have a better baseline starting for next year than you've had this year. You just had to shoot at an arbitrary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so you'll have a...
And those numbers that do appear on the overtime line item, we knew they'd never be hit.
Yeah.
That's why we reserve the right to cap contingency for both fire and SO, right, Park?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So in both those cases, it gives us a chance to isolate.
So that. Although it appears like it's an exorbitantly high number, actually you anticipated something like this.
Yes, we had, I believe Mr. Gallagher and I had some terse words during the budget process over the overtime, but it was just a manner of how we're changing it out to do the line items because the numbers used are not consistent with the historical usage. However, we are working to bring the historical usage down also.
I understand. Thank you.
Any other questions on the budget?
No.
There's two other things, real quickly. We kind of glossed over it and or raced through the holidays, but Commissioner McBride and Pat came down and did the annual jail inspection last month. At least based on the report card that was given to me, it looks like we passed. One bit of information was that the National Institute of Corrections came out at my request and did an assessment of the physical plant and our jail operations, gave us a glowing review overall, identified a few areas that we need to address in the way of training, which we're already well on our way to doing. So anticipate the service at our facility to get even better, but still no mints on the chocolate or mints on the pillows. So last thing was last week I met with my former chief deputy, Tad Fletcher, who is now the chief of alternative sentencing in Carson City. He's made a request to utilize the sheriff's office radio frequencies when they are doing things either in Story County or some areas of Reno where they cannot reach their dispatch. They can still reach our dispatch center. I've had a conversation with Pat over it, Dave Ballard, and Gary's been in on the conversation some. It won't affect fire frequencies at all, but we're going to look at entering into an agreement with them for the use of those frequencies. The flip side of that for us is that they're willing to help out some of the stuff that Judge Harrington feels is necessary when people need to be supervised to a higher extent. So it's a great relationship with our partners in Carson City, and it'll be a win-win for everyone across the board. And they should be getting me an MOU in the near future.
And I might add to that, the potential cost savings is much more than probably two out of three commissioners might recall. Commissioner Chevangin, I think you might remember our former Justice of the Peace had a rather large proposal out there that was going to give the bailiff alternative sentencing jurisdiction, and the cost tag approaching that. I can't remember, but it seemed like it was definitely in the five digits and probably in the mid-five digit numbers almost just to do this. So it's, for what little volume we have, it's a great solution.
Yeah, it'd be a very small volume on our radio usage, and actually any costs that are incurred through supervision or for the supervision of people will be borne by those people. It's not an expense that the county will see.
So. Great. Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you, Sheriff. I'd like to have a couple of comments on the sheriff's budget. Number one, last year when we were looking at the jail versus the sheriff, their budgets, their individual budgets, one of the questions I asked was, were the deputies, and they were all deputies at that point in time, were they at any point in time on patrol? Because if they were, they should have gotten allocated to the sheriff's fund within the general and should have been taken out of the jail fund. We have subsequently found out, since I asked that same question, that there are two actually that are now in patrol that were being charged to the jail fund. So that's a good part of this whole process, because now I can generalize that up, put that into the proper account where it is, and give some relief to the jail fund where it stands now. under the unemployment, they're going to get their money regardless of who was the last individual employer. And even though in some cases we were down the line, they didn't stay long enough at their previous employment to have that employment cover all of their needs through the unemployment process. So it just kind of filters down to the last person who had enough money to go ahead and do that. So that's how the unemployment game is played. And the last thing, as far as the one person short, I know he's one person short in the jail. I'm not sure if he's one or two in the sheriff's department, but
we got to make those full-time equivalents. We have to get them done sooner. We need to make the process better so that the sheriff, if he's got 7 full-time or 14 full-time equivalents, that he has 14 full-time equivalents to go. If he has 7 full-time equivalents or 6 within the jail department, we have to make sure that we get that immediately, because the longer we wait to do that, it's all covered with overtime. And so that process, and I'll get with Austin and the sheriff on this, that process needs to be better. If we need to give him a, you know, as Gary has a pool, I don't know if there's a pool out there, but we have to minimize that time, because we've been 6 months down the road on this, and we haven't got that extra person, which could have eliminated a lot of the stuff, as the sheriff said, going forward. So from my standpoint and Austin's, we're going to do whatever we can to see if that happens. Our next is, go ahead.
And if you'll just play back momentarily both Hugh and Sheriff Antonaro's comments about deputies initially being charged and paid from the jail fund but now out on patrol, that is probably the final and conclusive reason why, in my opinion, it is all one operation, and what we need to do is eliminate that jail fund going into the 1st of July so that it's the sheriff's office inclusive of jail operations. So I think you're going to see that coming across here hopefully soon.
I don't agree.
Well, whether we were to combine them or not, going with overtime is costing twice as much money for employment as having your full-time equivalents.
Darn close.
Right?
Yeah, darn close. By the time you take halftime overtime with added PERS and the other loaded factors on there, yes.
I'll comment on Pat's comment. If you don't feel that the jail fund can be restructured to include those items to make that a self-sustaining fund, then you're right. It should be. Okay? But we have an opportunity where we have two different classes. We have correctional officers versus patrol officers. If you are unwilling or you don't think it's a good idea to go forward to restructure the resolution that provides funds for the jail fund, then that's right. It's got to be there. So it's a discussion. I would like to see it separated, because it is a separate, distinct function now. But if we can't come to arms with how we're going to fund it, then you know, there's really no other choice. It was not meant for that in the first place. We all know that. So if we can save it, fine. If we can't, I mean, I don't have a problem with that. So next we have
just one question. What's the issue with bringing on another officer? Is there a challenge to that? Available or
once another correctional officer is hired in the jail, then we can release one of those deputies that should be on patrol, which should satisfy at least one of the shortages that the sheriff has on patrol.
Well, it seems to me that's one of the major issues that we could address that would solve part of this, right? Is one more jail employee?
Yeah.
Well, and actually, here's the problem, is finding people. We don't have a pool. We don't have, I do have a list of reserves. However, unless we can refine the process with Austin, even though I have 7-8 reserves, I still have to go through another selection process. I have to do an in-house recruitment, go through the whole process. Basically, we start from front one, even though we've already ran these people through the process. We have to do it again now that we're going to hire this full-time person. If we don't have anybody, then we have to go through the outside or to the outside, and it's an even longer process to get it. The one deputy that is currently still working in the jail will be coming out with this one that I'm in the final stages of bringing on. But even at that, bringing the one deputy out and a new corrections officer inside, that still puts me at minimal staffing in there. Only thing I've done is taken higher priced people out and replaced them with the correction staff. In reality, and you know, if you want to wave a magic wand, need two more bodies in the jail.
Well, in fact, if you were to hire another correctional officer, would that be a reserve? Because when your people are out on a medical, if they're prepared to return to work, you have to make this job available to them, do you not?
Well, I do have to make it available to them, and it's not just a matter of people being out. That generates more oversight. But even best circumstances, I've got five people in there. It takes five people to cover the shift 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Somebody's going to get sick. Somebody's going to take a vacation. Somebody's going to have something happen where they need to be out. The only way to cover that is with overtime. When you start putting little hash marks of where people go, there are just not enough bodies, period. One helps if I could get one more. Two is going to really crimp that quite a bit. But short of actually allocating additional staffing for the jail, it's going to be a problem that we continue to deal with.
Sounds like we need to research this a little bit. Do you? Is that something that you guys could undertake?
Yep, we'll do it.
Kind of have a staff, get with the sheriff and overview and see if you can offer some alternatives.
Because I think we understand it's less expensive to the county to go ahead and have the correctional officer being replaced with another correctional officer instead of a deputy.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
And cut the overtime, which is right. Very expensive for
okay.
Next up is Mr. Haymore, Community Development.
Good morning, Commissioners, and almost good afternoon. Community Development, we have that in front of you. There's actually only three items that I'd go over right off the bat. It's overtime. I'm at 117%. Typically, this is because we did just complete a 525,000 square foot building in 6 months and filled it. And so myself personally, that don't get paid overtime, spent 22 nights out there and worked 16 hours straight on those 22 days to try to reduce that overtime. I'm not going to tell you it's going to get better, and it's not going to even out. I got another project that will be announced today if we get the final paperwork, another 703,000 square foot building that we have to have in operation by August 1st of this year, with over 1 million square foot of dirt moving on this project. So Hugh and I had talked about it, at what point do we hire another body, and I believe it in this kind of business is when we pour concrete, not when they come and say they're going to build it. So we're looking at that constantly, and it could be another banner year with millions of square foot of new buildings built out at the Tahoe Industrial Center. The next one that we're up on very high is 94% is auto maintenance. My current vehicle is 9 years old, has 169,000 miles. Every time I take it in the shop, they call me back with really good news saying this needs it, this needs it, this is $1,000, we basically rebuilt the whole front end, and then we had one of the extra vehicles that we decided to change the pickup, which cost us $1,200 to fix the air conditioning, the defrost and where it fluctuates because the thing didn't work and it didn't go everywhere. One other item is the high item is computer equipment. I replaced in the budget this year and budgeted to buy new software for Stacy's to be integrated and online. Bought a new laptop for Shannon. And then, lo and behold, my computer down at the tri office would not be able to do the plan checking that I needed to do. And James came down and said, Dean, computer's 6-8 years old. You need a new computer to be able to read all these plans. And so I did get that pre-approved through management and Hugh, and that's why that budget's up there. Overall, my budget is only 31% for the 6 months. I'd like to also let you know, as Hugh said, we brought in just catching new business licenses. I'm stopping people constantly and say either get a business license or pay a $600 fine per day. We've increased the business licenses, and we're already at 98% of the building permits. I currently have another $100,000 worth of building permits sitting in here as soon as I get the plan checking that I will issue this week. And so I will be close to 300 to 400% over on revenues taken in.
And I would add to this, over the years, we've tweaked the FTE models in full-time equivalents, excuse me, Mr. Maddox, models in essentially every office. And we've, as I've said before, we've cut down to the bone, and in many cases, are now gnawing on the bone sometimes. I think out of most of our offices, regardless of whether it's a correctional officer here or a, you know, a new fire station, if I looked at any office that is probably at its critical staffing element, it would be the building department in particular. Keep in mind we have three people in there, and we two of those are essentially field people, inclusive of Dean as a supervisor and as an economic development focal point too. So this will be one that, again, we're going to look at staffing models throughout as we go into the next budget year. There might be some shared solutions. We're looking at fire reviews and those types of things, but that is certainly, this office is cranking it out right now.
Yeah, we're thankful to be busy, to have the new companies coming in and building the new projects out there. Any questions?
I would comment, Dean, that if we were paying you overtime, the county would be broke at this point. I don't know of any one single individual that works here in our county that does the hours you do. And I know it normally starts at midnight or 1 or 2 a.m. because that's when the concrete pours, and you're there for every one of them. And I know that you're there. So I really appreciate what you do for us. And the one question I'd have on the overtime, Hugh, is this a similar issue that we decided to calculate overtime, so we picked an arbitrary number and we're dealing with in a similar department?
We tried to reflect a little bit of what was historical through the years, and then trying to figure out that, you know, what we thought the business opportunity was where we'd have to do or go through the overtime. There has been a little bit more overtime on this side because in previous months, in the beginning of the year, we had a person that would go out to the individual sites. This is where I believe Pat may be going to. And I think it was a tremendous opportunity for all the departments to share in the individual. Only they should have the expense for it. We don't have that right now, but I think we need to revisit it because I thought it was a great program.
Wasn't his department pretty well staffed until we raided it and brought somebody over here somewhere?
Yeah, we've got.
We're in pretty good shape at one point.
That was not in the building function. That was planned.
That was, but there was some synergism there. You're right.
You're welcome, Austin.
we lost 2/3 of our staff when we lost that. Plus, when we lost, I did not realize how much Diane did when she retired in the building department, how much I counted on her, and boy, do I miss her, and things like that. So we talked about another part-time person, different things, but it's so complicated over there sometimes. You know, we are looking at some things to maybe bring a part-time person, they're doing one of these floaters and things like that.
Well, you deserve some help.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I found out that when Austin did come in, and I thanked Austin because he started taking a lot of those duties over from me, and then my wife got to see me again, and then we got busy again, and now my wife doesn't get to see me again. So after 26 and a half years of a great job that I've had and a great time working here, I love it, and I appreciate all the support and everything that has happened here. I've never had a dull moment. To move along, Pat, Marshall, Bill, we all went down and met with the taxation board, trying to still, after 20-plus years, figure out a way to keep our sales tax in Story County instead of going to the other counties. Of course, the same old, get a zip code for each area, we can't get a zip code, but what we did find out is that maybe if we add a four-digit number to the zip codes, that can identify Story County. So Pat asked me to go to the four different post offices, and so I hit the first one right after that meeting down at Steamboat or South Virginia. Absolutely got hosed and absolutely got told that they weren't going to help me. I told Pat that, and I put it in writing. So then I went to the Dayton post office, and Terry, Ralph's daughter from Lockwood, helped me, got on the phone right then, called Las Vegas, got addressing, and within a day, come back, and now we have an application that we can buy a four-digit add-on number to our zip code. So I got the application, talked to whoever I couldn't understand from the post office, and we will go through that procedure and start that.
I ran my street address and through the USPS site, and it gave me a plus four number for my address. And then I ran another person's address up there that I just happened to know offhand, and it gave a different plus four address for them. So I don't know.
When I talked to the postmaster, Terry, down at Dayton, that is for, typically that four number is their routing number for their delivery people. And when I said that, I said, we do have a four-digit number down to Mark Twain. And I says, does that identify just Mark Twain in Story County and not Lyon County? She said, no. It's that route delivery number that delivery route guy goes to. So it's the route delivery number, but we found out that we can get it identified. Of course, just like everything in the U.S. government, you have to buy it, and so we have to buy those numbers. So Pat has asked me to identify, try to get one for Tri, McCarran, Nevada, and then one for Lockwood and the River District, and then one for the Highlands, and then one for Mark Twain of Story County.
Okay, because I asked it specifically. I did the search on plus four zip or zip plus four, mm-hmm. and that's what it came, but that's actually the routing number. Huh?
Yeah,
and it gets even more convoluted, if you will.
Yeah.
Between two agencies known as the U.S. Post Office and the Nevada Department of Taxation, they managed to make this thing a nightmare. But I want to thank Nicole. I kind of asked her for some help at the last meeting, and she jumped on it. What we are learning in the process from both that meeting and from some of Nicole's target specific is, if you don't have a Virginia City PO and you use zip only, and in some cases that's an option that is left off by the vendor. They don't have zip plus four. You're going to get taxed at the Washoe County rate. That's, for instance, if you're buying direct from Macy's or Sears or whoever it may be. If you're buying from Amazon, get ready for this one. If you're buying direct from Amazon, and if you use either a Virginia City PO box or a zip plus four, you'll get charged at the correct rate. We've tested that now and it works. If you are buying from one of Amazon's marketplace partners that does not have a brick and mortar, so I'm going to differentiate. I bought some stuff from PetSmart. I got taxed because PetSmart has a brick and mortar in the state of Nevada. But if you buy from somebody that's an obscure company, a fashion design company that may not have brick and mortars at all, you're not going to get taxed because they don't have the voluntary compliance agreement.
Well, after I looked at the things that I had collected out from the Highlands and then what Nicole had provided to us, it's hit and miss.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, it depends what software the vendors are using. It's just a soup sandwich. So, you know, we'll continue our quest possibly in the courts. But again, we're learning more every day, and particularly as we work with the big projects and the developments out in Tri, because that's where the real money comes from. So, and Nicole, thanks again.
Just one more quick thing. As I said, I gave a temporary CFO to Gateway Commerce, 525,000 square foot building that we started July 1. Moved 555 loads in last week alone. In that facility. They were expanding from another facility, and Friday they told me they're going to take, they're in 275,000 of that building, so there was 110,000 and another 160,000. They took the rest of it, they're taking 425,000 square foot of that building. So that also gives us the room to expand Pittsburgh Paint, but they need to take the 200,000 where they're leaving. So that's good news. I also would tell you that probably by tomorrow, when everything's said and done, we will start a 703,000 square foot new facility out at 3200 USA Parkway. During this meeting, I brought to the attention of staff before, and I will tell you there has been an appointment made to meet with the owner of the Perry Ranch to do a light industrial office facility on their land. There, I have made them, got them in touch with the GID to work with the GID to utilize their facilities at the GID. And so that meeting's going to take place on the 28th of this month. So there could be some small upper scale and light industrial buildings right next to Lockwood to help that community also. But we'll not have any traffic impact through that area at all. Thank you.
I'd like to mention, too, that anyone who's been following the percentages on these budgets, for Dean's example, he might be over on a few things, but the dollar value is insignificant. There's not that much money. This House, we're not taking public comment. You can do it at the portion later on. There's no discussion on this. So we're going to take a 10-minute recess, okay?